All of you had a chance to read the constitution of the organisation at this point? No? It's still downloadable on the net. I have not updated the website yet, so it's a pretty junky looking website, but the new one looks a lot better, I can assure you. Is there anyone who would like to, who's a typist, who would like to take notes for us today?
Anyone touch type? I can do it.
Sam?
Do you want to do it, Sam?
Do you want to do it? That's the question.
Type them
as we go today. It'd just be like taking notes as we go.
I'm actually not that fast.
No worries.
I can do it if need be.
But you have to be fairly quick on the computer and know the computer fairly well.
Renee? Yeah? Yes? Who?
Well, Glenys, I think you can type fairly rapidly, can't you?
Yep.
I've got the computer down here all set up for you. And once we start the team meetings, I'll show you what to do on them, and it's all set up ready to go. We've got templates on there already, and it's all set up to go. But you don't need it now. What we want to do is take the notes of all of your discussion with us today, and we're going to incorporate all of that discussion into the teams themselves. But to do that, it's easier for me if all the notes are already taken, and that way I don't have to transcribe the audio. Does that make sense? So if we have somebody typing it up as we go, that'd be fantastic. And then we can turn those things into documents. So you don't have to worry about formatting. Just type the data. That's all we need. Okay. Anything else we need to cover?
I don't think so.
Before we start?
Is
everything recording? Everything's recording.
Yep.
The Zoom's recording. Yep. Everything's recording.
And did everyone find the schedule of which groups?
After a lot of trouble.
He
I only got it on
the homepage.
I put it right on the homepage. But I only got it on there Sunday night, so sorry about that. Welcome along today. Yeah. Who's excited? Yeah.
It's a new
really
phase,
excited.
Isn't it?
Yeah. We're I know Mary's not as excited as I am.
I'm processing fear. I've been throwing up since about 6.
Mary.
The new phase is triggering fear. The film crews and the new websites and the new phases. I'm excited, but I'm also afraid.
Mary's not that happy with the new websites. So there's a couple of pictures of her on it, you see, and it's just like, she's not that happy with that. Yeah. What we want to do in the first half an hour is explain to you the principles of the Learning Centre, the projects and the teams. And then what we want to do is get into the nitty-gritties about each team. This weekend we're not covering all the teams, as you will have noticed. There's only about six or seven teams that we're covering. And the reason why is we just don't have enough time in one weekend to discuss all of the details about every team. So what we're hoping to do is try to plan another one of these gatherings in a couple of weeks' time. We're not certain about venues because Near Easter venues are a bit more difficult to grab a hold of. But we're going to try to do it either before or after Easter, after the Easter weekend, to do the rest of the teams. So bear in mind that this weekend is just a few, basically half of the teams, or a bit less than half actually. I think altogether at the moment there's 17 teams and we're covering about seven or eight this weekend. So there's still quite a lot of teams to do afterwards. And some of the other teams are quite involved. For instance, there's the Soul, S-O-U-L team, and that team is going to have very, very many facets in that team. And for that reason, we may need quite a number of hours to discuss the details about that particular team. The reason why we've got this front area all open is so that if you've brought notebooks or whatever, the people that are interested in the team we're discussing, we would like you to come forward and sit down in that area. And also, if you've got notepads, the reason why we put it up as desks is so if you've got notepads or anything, you want to write down details, you've got the desk in front of you and you can write on it and so forth. Does it look a bit like a school now? Is it sort of, yeah. Sort of, oh no, I'm going back to my childhood. That's a good thing. And so that's the plan today. The first team we're discussing from about 10:30 to 12 or so, 12:30, is the environment team. which we've already been working with on our property, just to get them up to speed for the next few months of things that are going to be coming up on the learning centre here. I think in the afternoon, I can't remember.
We're doing construction after lunch.
Construction after lunch, yep.
Then
so you can't remember either.
I run out of time.
Records, that's right.
And that's it for today, isn't
that
it?
That'll be it for today,
and tomorrow,
pretty much. And then
have
tomorrow,
got
we've got
Thanks
four.
Our
tomorrow
printers.
We've got four. Do you mind the colours of the God's Way of Love colours?
That's the a taste of the new website.
That's a taste of the new website.
Yeah. So there's those three we're going to talk about today.
Is there any questions before we start that you guys would like to ask? If we could just have the mic there, that'd be good. If you can stay left and right, you guys, with the mic, so it just makes it easier for Igor to know which one to adjust. That's all.
Yeshua, a passion of mine's been fundamentals, which is supply. I couldn't find where...
Fundamentals, which is what?
Supplies.
Supplies.
I couldn't find it anywhere in the headings.
Every single team will have its own need for supplies. And obviously the supplies for every single team are going to be very different. And a lot of the supplies are going to be you're going to have to know what you're getting. And so, for example, in the technical team, so the science team, for example, you would not know what to order at this point. You would have to have a whole lot of education before you knew what certain things would need to be purchased. And so for that reason, each team is going to have to be responsible for what it does. And it's the team leader that's going to have the primary responsibility of making sure that everything that we need on the ground is actually ordered and ready and in place before the whatever the project is begins. So that's why we wanted to have a project manager for each project. So the idea of the project manager is that they organise all of the logistics, if you like, of supply for each of the teams who are going to be involved in the project itself. But the project manager does not need to know the details of all the ordering, because the team leaders are going to need to know more about that. So, for example, if you're in an environment team and you need to, for example, you might have a very clay soil that we're working on, so we need some gypsum, we need some other minerals, we need quite a lot of humic matter, so we need bales of hay and a lot of other things like that. We need obviously the tools, the hand tools. We might actually need a loader in just to move things around. Now, the person who's the leader of that team would need to know all of those details of what is needed and order all of those details if we have the funds. Now, if we don't have the funds, we just do not proceed with the project. Under the terms of the Constitution, I cannot proceed with any project unless the funds are available. Does that make sense? So if you find that nothing happens over the next 6 months, it's primarily going to be because the funds are not available. And I'm not going to plead with you about funds or anything like that. We're not going to do any of those kind of things. We're just not going to proceed with a project unless the funds are available. Does that make sense? And it's just the desire of each person involved as to what happens there.
Could you just... There'll be a project... So projects might be created through the cooperation of a number of teams.
And maybe there might even be 5, 6 or even 10 teams involved with a single project, right?
Each team has its own team leader.
Yep.
And each project has its own project leader.
Yep. And each project will be very different depending on the location. So, for example, a project to plant rainforest trees in the middle of the desert probably isn't going to work too well unless we do a lot of work to the desert first, right? So obviously, if there's a rainforest ecosystem that we're creating, then that might be specific to only certain types of learning centres. And the idea of all of this is that we want to replicate these learning centres around the world eventually. Does that make sense? And to have all of these centres available. And the projects for each centre, some will be the same, or some will be able to cross-pollinate, but others will be completely different to each other. And that's why we've separated the projects from the teams, if that makes sense.
Now, you were referring to a project leader and team leaders, and sometimes the team leader might act as the project leader, but
depending on what they feel capable of. If we have no project leader, then the project doesn't go ahead. So if, none of you want to take any responsibility for any of the work that's happening, then that's fine, we just don't do any work. Does that make sense? And I'm perfectly okay with that, and I don't want to put any pressure on anybody to make you feel guilty about that either. And in fact, I'd prefer that you don't volunteer for something out of guilt. Does that make sense? Deal with the guilt first, and then look at whether you have a desire or a passion. If you have a desire or passion, then that's the thing. So you might find there's a project that you have a specific desire or passion for, but just because you decide you do, it doesn't mean that there's above this, there is the learning centre's managers. So in the case of the learning centre here, it's Robert and Angela Griffith. And in the case of the learning centre down at Armidale that we're hoping to get started, it at the moment will be Peter and Eloisa Litton Hitchens. And they will basically have oversight of that particular learning centre. So you've got the learning centre managers who guide the entire process. And the organisation, the God's Way of Love organisation, is basically above that in terms of giving direction. So the God's Way of Love organisation gives direction to the learning centres, and the learning centre managers then give directions to the project managers and leaders and so forth, and to the teams. But please don't think that this is like a hierarchical thing. We just need to have this kind of thing organised for the sake of organisation, because if there's no direction or leadership, then eventually every organisation fails.
At the moment, you're going to find that team leaders will be the same. The same person might be a team leader, a project leader, and a director.
Yeah. We all need to engage. What's going on there?
I'm bored.
We all need to engage the. What are you laughing at me for? We all need to engage our desires and passions. That's what this is all about. So please do not do anything that you do not desire to do or that you don't have a passion for. That being said, many of you have locked up your passions and desires because of what happened when you were small or little. So there are things at the moment many of you just shudder at the thought of doing that actually are a part of your passions and desires, but you shudder because of the emotional harm that you received when you were little when you did those things. Does that make sense? So don't be afraid to experiment a bit as well. That's the whole point of the whole exercise, is to help you discover your passions and desires and live in them. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah. And it is a desire, for, as you would imagine on the Divine Love Path, this is a desire-focused activity. It's not like, right, you've written your name in black and white, therefore you have a responsibility and it will be done. And no, you do what you desire. And if you desire to be at a meeting or if you desire to be a part of a group and then the next week you don't desire it...
That's all right.
That's okay.
We're okay with that. So if the project manager says, yes, I'll project manage, and then they don't rock up at the event... Then we'll just go, well, is anybody else prepared to be the project manager? And nobody else is. And say, let's all go home. That's okay. And let's all feel our emotions about that. Does that make sense? We want to have everything harmonious with passion and desire. Everything.
Because,
there's no focus on getting the work done, in other words.
It's right? When we've become in our lives task-orientated, outcome-driven, that we've squashed our passions and desires, haven't we? Like when you're at school and you have an assignment and then you have a deadline and you have to get it right and you have to get an A and it suddenly becomes less joyful and experiential and, oh no, I need to get this piece of paper with a big tick on it so I get approval. And that's very far from love and it's very far from our true desires. So we're undoing all of that.
So if we notice that you are being driven by guilt, or you are being driven by the desire for approval, or you have some very strong projections that we've got to listen to you in some way, or, you know, those kind of things, most of those things will result in you getting sent home. But it won't be a sent home permanently.
He always says sent home.
But sent home's really good. because home's a great place to process your emotions, right? So home is a good thing. So don't feel afraid about that. Just allow that process to happen organically. Don't come along to the things going, oh, I'm going to get sent home today. You know, either. You know, don't worry about that. Come with the passion and desire that you have for the particular task ahead. And just let the emotions that are present get triggered at the time they're present. Does that make sense? Just let that happen. Don't try to plan ahead to avoid the emotional truth that you might be faced with in the process. So the whole goal of the organisation itself is to help you in an organic manner deal with your emotions as they occur in a live situation. That's the purpose. We want the organisation, in other words, to become a vehicle of helping people become at one with God through this process of truth being acknowledged and truth being stated and love and truth being demonstrated. That's what we want. Does that make sense to everyone? Yeah? So don't be afraid to engage the process. A lot of the ones that are coming along on Tuesdays, we've felt for the that are coming along to our house with the environment group, we can feel the fear there when you first come rock up and you go, what's AJ going to say to me today? You know, what's going to happen? And you don't need to worry about any of that. Like, just let the process be engaged. Just let that happen. Try not to plan ahead to try to avoid things. Just let the process happen. If you let the process happen, you'll find everything will work quite well and your emotions will come up quite naturally. And you'll also learn a lot about love and truth. But on top of that, you'll learn a lot about other things too. A lot about science, mathematics, nature, environment, and a lot of other matters about serving, love about serving, and all sorts of matters. And so, you know, if we have a focus of that, we'll find we'll learn a lot of things in this process. And you'll really enjoy the whole process. Those who are coming along on Tuesdays, are you enjoying that process?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? So you get some idea of, you know, there's those who have come along. You learn something in the process generally. Many of us have been city bound, so we haven't had much to do with the land or much to do with understanding how to look after ourselves in that regard. And so we can learn a lot through that process. But also you learn a lot about love and yourself and how your own emotions have reflected upon the land. And like in the last group that we did last Tuesday, we reflected upon a bit of damage that had happened on our property and then how that emotion that created that damage was inside of each one of us present, and how we had that emotion present that caused the damage to the property. And if we can allow ourselves to address that emotionally, then we can work our way through many things. So the teams are what we're focusing on over the next few weeks, is getting the teams sorted out. Now initially it's going to be a bit messy, because some of you think you should be the leader when we probably don't think you should be. And particularly if you think you should be, we probably think we won't be. There's issues of humility involved. Does that make sense of how humble the person is? And I just wanted to read you a few things from the Constitution. Because remember, under the terms of the organisation, we are bound by this Constitution. So what that means is the Constitution defines how things need to occur. And in the Constitution, there is a definition about who can become a team leader. So if I can just find that area, wherever it is. And maybe the index might be helpful. I put it in here somewhere, of course, but yes, here we've got him. So part of the purpose of the organisation is to encourage, develop and provide and support learning projects, learning groups and learning teams around the earth, just as they have been already provided in the spirit world. And then I go through what's the purpose of them. And the purpose of them is firstly to demonstrate divine love and divine truth and God's laws in action. The second purpose is to assist bringing humankind on earth and in the spirit world into harmony with God's intentions. The third is to assist the acquiring of and the application of knowledge and wisdom. And the fourth is this. encouraging, developing and being of service to specific individuals who shall become leaders for these learning projects, groups and teams. Persons who demonstrate individual passion, desire and a love for their specific fields of interest and endeavour. So that's the first requirement for a leader of any team. They must have a passion, desire and love for that particular area of life or endeavour. Does that make sense? The second, they have a strong desire to live in truth, love and humility and emotional openness while fulfilling those passions and desires. So that's the second primary requirement of a team leader. So some of you may have quite strong desires for a certain area, but you may still be quite shut down emotionally. And you might still be quite shut down when it comes to wanting to hear the truth. And you will find we can't use you in the role of a leader if you have those particular things going on. You see, the way the learning centre is going to work the best is if everybody who's present not only has a strong desire for what they're wanting to do or achieve, but secondly, has a strong desire to feel and hear and more truth, and have a strong desire to be more humble in the process of receiving that truth. Does that make sense? So this is very important to us, far more important than many of you realise at this point. And through this process, you'll come to see the importance of this, the importance of being in these strong desires and passions. Does that make sense? But also the importance of living in truth, humility and love and openness. They're the two important things that we want to focus on. So what we want to do is eventually, and sometimes there is not going to be in a group with a passion, a leader in that group who is yet in this space. And if that's the case, some of the people who we feel are in that space who have a passion for that area might do some things with that team until somebody in that team demonstrates a passion or desire to do both of those things. Does that make sense? So in the end, we want the leaders to be an example of love, not to be bosses. Can you see the difference between those two things?
And the reason we call them learning teams is because everyone on the team, it's not about getting a job done, it's about having a desire to learn more about whatever it is.
And the team leader
will be the best learner.
Will be the best learner. In other words, they'll be the one who has the most passion to learn. So many of you have large amounts of intellectual knowledge and experience from your past. And much of that, to be frank with you, is going to have to be thrown out the window, because much of it has been based around fear-based learning, and much of it has been based around not a process of engaging the soul. Does that make sense? Now, while much of that experience is going to be handy in the future, so some of you have a great deal of knowledge about plants, for example. Now, it's really wonderful to have that knowledge about plants. The greatest knowledge you can ever have about a plant is that your soul condition affects that plant. Right? And if you don't get that, it doesn't matter how much knowledge you have about the plant, you're not getting the biggest possible thing you could understand about the plant. Does that make sense? And if you're not getting the biggest possible thing, how can you then become a leader of that group when that group needs to learn that biggest truth first? Can you see?
Yeah. The danger is when our knowledge makes us arrogant, makes us think, I know everything, instead of, I know things, and what more can I learn? So there's the energetic difference, the emotional difference.
So many of you also have passion in technical and mathematical fields, right? Now, that is another area you're going to have to find a lot of changes occurring inside of yourself before you can actually work in these teams, because that area, while very, very fascinating, has huge influences upon, or our soul has huge influences upon it. Also, there's a lot of information at the moment that can be given from the spirit world to those teams, but everyone because they already think they know enough or they think they're on the right track is so blocked to receiving that information from the spirit world. And what we want to do is get rid of those blockages so that this information can just flow really easily and readily to us. Does that make sense? And so a lot of our scientific ideas, some of them are based on truth, but quite a lot of others are based on a very, very basic and limited thinking. And we need to expand our minds a lot more than just be limited in our thinking and what's going on. And this is where it would be an incorporation of spirit information given to us as well as our passions and desires. And if we're open, in other words, if we're in particular humble and emotionally open, we will then be able to assimilate that information. If we're closed and we go, ah, no, I just don't agree with that, and off we go, we're already closing down ourselves. The key is to be wide open as possible, as wide open as possible. You're allowed to have your own opinions, and to be frank with you, if you think we're doing the wrong thing with the organisation, then that's okay, you're allowed to think that. My suggestion is go and start up your own organisation and run it how you think then. Does that make sense? But don't expect me to change or us, the persons who are directing the organisation, to change from this constitution that we're trying to present to the world. Because it's not going to change from this very much at all. Do you follow me? And it's very important to understand that. You're allowed to have your own desires and passions. You're also allowed to not come or come, depending on your desires or passions. We also are not going to limit the people who come. So sometimes there's going to be people from all over the, you know, all around the community come onto the centre to do something. Now, many of them are not going to know the principles of love and truth that many of you have heard intellectually over the past few years. However, if we're loving and truthful in the moment, in every interaction, they'll very rapidly learn the truth as a result. Can you see? It's sort of like a practical way of learning the truth without having to come along and sit listening to somebody for a couple of hours about it. And this is where we feel that it's going to be a very practical way for people to learn. And we'll be more and more integrating into the community in this regard. And that's really what we want to achieve as well. We want to have an integration with the community. And so we get to the stage where many people in the community know what we're doing and many of them feel quite happy about what we're doing and also want to join in with what we're doing. Not because they believe the same things, but because they just feel the love and they feel the truth present when they're doing it there. Does that make sense? That's what we want to have happen. So that's the purpose of the teams. Now, the members of the team, we've put in another section of the Constitution, it says this: to assist individuals who are specialised in specific areas of learning and who themselves have a strong and passionate desire and a love for their specific fields of interest and endeavour, and who have a strong desire to live in truth, love and humility and emotional openness while fulfilling those passions and desires. So you notice it's almost the same as for the leader. In other words, what we're trying to do is assist every one of us to engage our passions and desires in a loving manner, but also stay in a humble place while we're doing that, and then we get to work together. We have different emotions that are going to get triggered by working together, and instead of talking behind everyone else's back and, you know, all the things that normally happen in an organisation, I'm not happy with Mary, so I go and talk to Joe Blow about Mary, and I go and talk to, so, and what do you think? I think this. And you know,
you can tell he doesn't do
Mary's,
that often.
Mary is really angry most of the time. What do you think? You know, and we gather support for our viewpoint. Now, that's not the kind of thing we want to have happening in the learning centre at all. What we want is a complete openness. So who's the first person I would go to speak to if I have a problem with Mary? Mary. So, Mary, you just got this problem with this anger, haven't you? Like, no, that was not today, was it? Fear today it was. And you know, I talk with Mary about that. Now, if Mary is still upset and bitter and angry and I feel there's still an issue, what would I do then? well, let's have a look at the team leader. Yeah, let's go to the team leader and have a talk. Look, I've had a talk with Mary about this. There's something going on between the two of us. You know, we need some help to resolve it. And, you know, one thing we need to bear in mind is that there's my emotions as well as her emotions. And if I've got somebody who's a third party who's not involved in the problem, then they might be able to help us better to see what emotions I've got going on and what emotions Mary's got going on to cause our disagreements or whatever that is happening. Now, if the team leader can't do that, the team leader will automatically ask for somebody else to come along try to assist with that issue, if that's possible. What we'll be doing initially is that we'll be having some meetings with the team leaders once we sort out the team leaders and who they are. We'll be having some meetings with the team leaders about how to deal with different things emotionally. And so the team leaders will by nature get some more help and assistance more than the average person, because they are needing to be examples of love themselves. And if they can't be, then we'll have to ask the team leader to step down for a while they sort themselves out and become more loving, and we'll ask somebody else to be a team leader. And if there's no team leader and nobody else can step into the job, then the team just doesn't function for a while. That's how it's going to be. So initially it's going to feel, for many of you, oh, this is quite frustrating, because all of a sudden I'm doing something and all of a sudden then I'm not doing something, and you know, there's all that emotion will start coming up. Because what we want to illustrate is when we are not in a condition of love and truth, there is automatically resistance in a team. And what we want to do is sort that resistance out. We don't want to do what the world does with that resistance. What the world does with that resistance is they all sit on their problems, they all sit on their, and instead the actual emotion gets then put into the task. And so if I'm angry, I take the anger out. If I'm, you know, feel afraid, I take my fear out and so forth. And what's going to happen in the learning centre when there's anger and fear and everything else being imposed upon it? It will become exactly the same as every other learning environment on the planet. Does that make sense? And that's not what we want. We want it to remain in purity. Now, initially, it's going to be a bit difficult because many of us are quite a way away from purity. And so it'll take a lot of effort initially to get that purity into the teams and into the projects. Eventually, what we want to have is a whole group of people who can work together seamlessly with no aggro at all, everything, and you just love being there. And not only can we don't forget that we won't be just carrying it into the learning centre. It'll be carried into the community, that spirit. So if there's a community person who's had their house, you know, had fire in their house or something, we just all the ones who are in the construction team and the other helpers and volunteers just rock up and help them build their thing, and for nothing. Stuff like that is what we want to finish up doing, being able to do. Does that make sense? And that's all a part of what we're trying to accomplish here. Is there any questions about the leadership, if you like, of the teams? Or any questions about the teams generally? No? Jen, just behind you.
Thank you. Is there any presumption of understanding? If I'm trying something for the first time, which I'm bound to want to do, is there any presumption that there's a foreknowledge or understanding of what's required?
No, there isn't a presumption, but don't come along expecting that somebody else will teach you either. And my feelings are, is whenever you have a passion and desire to learn, you will automatically desire to attract to you all the things about that subject. So, for example, let's say we have a project, which we will be having, called an energy project. In that, there'll be issues of electronics that we want to deal with, right? Now, there'll be some of you would love to be involved in the energy project, but you know nothing about electronics. Well, don't expect the other people in the project to teach you what they know about electronics. What you'll need to do, firstly, is start investigating electronics for yourself. So you'll have to, you know, maybe think about buying a book or something like that, or asking them whether they have books available with basic electronics, and you read through and you just go total confusion. And then once you've done some investigation, then others may decide based on their emotions and yours and their desires and yours to actually teach you about that. But don't expect them to, because remember, every time you have an expectation, is it loving? And if I expect you to teach me something that you know, I'm automatically unloving. I'm automatically putting upon you an expectation. And this is something we want to not do at all. There is no expectations on anyone, including the people who know the subject, as well as the people who don't know. So if you know a lot about a particular subject, you're not going to be expected to teach or show other people about that subject unless you want to. Does that make sense? And if you don't know about the subject, don't expect the people who know to tell you without you investigating for yourself and having a desire for yourself.
Because by nature, someone who's passionate and wants to learn will take initiative, will they not? If you really want to know about something, you'll already be like into investigating it.
Hmm.
And equally, if you already know a lot about it and you're really passionate about it and someone comes along and goes, oh, I'm really interested in this, naturally you're going to talk about it, aren't you? So if everyone's in their pure passion, it should work very easily.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
So in the first instance, in that example of electronics, I should just rock up.
Just rock up.
And have a go and have a look.
Have a look at what's happening.
See what's happening.
See what...
If
it was me in the position, what I would do is I would go there with my notebook in hand and I'd write all down the things they're talking about. And then I'd go home onto the internet or whatever else and order some books and whatever. And then I'd read up about all those subjects and then I'd come back to, do you know what I mean? And use that as a process of my own learning. In other words, what we want to do is help each of you to take personal responsibility for your own learning. And you can see why, because we are all personally responsible for our own learning, actually. Nobody else has to teach us anything. Right, we are all personally responsible. So if we set up a dynamic where we make the people who know responsible for the people who don't, now we're actually breaking a law of love for the people who know. Because they are only responsible for their own learning. They're not responsible for something else. Now, they may have a desire to share their learning with someone else, and that would certainly be an act of love, but that is dependent upon their desire. It's not dependent upon a rule being made by an organisation. Does everyone follow that? So don't come along expecting that somebody else will show you things that you yourself have yet to investigate. However, if you come along in a process of observance in an area that you don't know and a willingness to learn and discover, you'll find you'll discover and learn a lot of things in the process. Does that make sense? Everyone's fine with that? Yeah? Good. Up the back there.
Hi. Is it unloving to go to a group with an intention just to get triggered? Because when
yes.
Jen said about electronics, my dad's quite electronical,
yes.
And so I had a major resistance to it.
Right.
And then I'm like, oh, what's this about? And it's like, oh, I just don't want to please my dad. Or
yeah. Yeah, I feel it is unloving to go to a group just to be triggered. Because it's a fear, firstly a fear-based action. And secondly, if you know that the issue of electronics triggers you, why don't you try to read up electronics at home rather than going to a group and projecting at the group, you're all like my dad. Do you see? It would be far more loving for us to resolve the issue separate to that. So don't come along to a group expecting, like, because you just want to get triggered. Like, that's a very unloving expectation, actually. Come along to a group if you have a passion or a desire to know it, or you at least want to find out about it. Does that make sense? Don't go for a negative reason to a group, ever. So for example, if you're crying all morning and we have a project happening in an afternoon, you're welcome to come to that project and you're welcome to continue crying. That's fine. Like, we're happy with that. The whole environment of the learning centre is going to be set up so that you're allowed to cry whenever you want. But if you're crying in the room where everybody else is trying to talk, then you'll be asked to go outside to cry so that the rest of the people can talk. Does that make sense? Because it's very unloving to then impose our emotions upon the rest of the group and stop the rest of the group from being able to do what they wish to do. So there'll be times, if you just come along and let what happens happen, you'll find things will get triggered inside of you automatically anyway. But don't come along for the purpose of that. Come along to experience your desires and learn.
And I feel this is somewhere where a lot of people go astray with these teachings. I'm just going to drag myself into this situation so I get triggered. Love should motivate everything. The reason we want to deal with our emotions should be because we desire to grow in love. So I've spoken to a few of you about going, oh, I just went to AJ's place just so I could get triggered. Like,
we've had people rock up at our front door saying, oh, I'm just here because I wanted to get triggered. And you know my first response to that? Well, you need to leave then. Is that trigger enough for you? but why would a person come along to a person's house just to be to deal with a fear or something?
If there's no loving desire motive, yes, we can feel our fear in a loving desire. It might get triggered in the process. But if we're just dragging ourselves into situations just to trigger fear, it's not going to happen because there's no desire driving it.
Yeah.
You can jump out of a plane, but if you're just doing it to trigger the fear, it's really, you know, you're not going to deal with the fear. If you desire to feel free and in connection with your body, and that's a really strong desire, and you realize actually at the moment there's some fear stopping that, but something I could do so that I could try and challenge that and experience that is jump out of a plane, then there's the likelihood of you dealing with the fear goes from like down here to up here in likelihood. So it's a really crucial part. If we're not dealing with our emotions in order to connect with God or to grow in love, or it should be both, then how are we ever... We're not going to get anywhere, guys. And that's why a lot of you are struggling, because you just go, I've got to feel, I've got to feel, I've got to feel, and yet you're losing sight of the goalposts.
Sorry, babe, but I'm just going to have to readjust you a bit because you're popping.
I just have a poppy voice.
No,
there we go.
Yeah, does everyone follow what Mary was just saying there?
So if you're in a learning space, like some of the things I've written up there, if you're really learning, think of a child. A child is motivated by their passion in an area, their love to do a certain thing, and that draws them into the learning process. And in that process, they take initiative, don't they? So if you find yourself like not wanting to take initiative, not being driven by love and passion and desire in an area, then clearly there's something amiss here. You're not going to learn.
And if it's a chore, don't go.
Yes.
Like, don't until it's not a chore. And work out why it feels like a chore. Why does it feel like a chore rocking up to a learning centre when there's no pressure on you to go at all? Like, so let yourself feel about that. So we need to engage these things emotionally rather than engaging them as we have done in the past, which is many times intellectually or driven by guilt or wanting to be a part of something. You know, a lot of us have emotions of, I want to be a part of that, only just so that I have the feeling of that I don't belong anywhere satisfied and things like that. And all of those emotions through this process will be identified at some point. Allow yourself to identify them, allow them to be seen, and then allow yourself to deal with them. That's the whole point of the learning centre. It's a learning centre about God's way of love, right? Not a learning centre about how to plant a plant or how to, you know, build an energy device or something like that. It's not a learning centre about those things. All of those other things will be added to you. In other words, you seek first God's love and all those other things will be added to you in this process of learning, right? But don't go there just for the sake of learning the particular thing. Remember, this is all about your relationship with God. This is all about putting God's way of love into action and then letting ourselves work out through the emotional reasons why that doesn't happen. That's what the purpose of the centre is, and that's what the purpose of the teams are and the purpose of the projects. Now, all of the projects will have an outcome, generally. And some will have an ongoing outcome. Some will be specific projects, just do that and it's done. And all of the learning centres will eventually have outcomes. But we don't want to focus on that. That's not what we're focused on. What we're focused on is the outcome of your soul growing in love and truth. That's going to be the focus of the centre. So when people come along to build bird boxes, while we might finish up building hundreds or thousands of them in the end, the focus is going to be the soul condition of the people involved building the boxes, not the outcome of the boxes themselves. Right? Is there any other questions?
We should maybe get started.
Should we get started on the first team then? Yep. The environment team is the first team. So all of those who would like to be involved in the environment team, there might not be enough seats. So if you can just come down and sit in the front seats, we'd bring your notepads or notebooks if you've got them with you. Glenys, if I can have you over here and I'll just show you. Just ideas, any ideas that come up in the process of the discussion, just write down the ideas. You don't have to write down all the... No, just as ideas, like points.
Yep.
Just start there and just... I'll come
and... let me know what I'm missing.
Yep.
You don't want people talking, you don't want their names, because I don't know everybody.
No, I don't need any of that. It's not like a minute taking or anything like that, no. All we need is just the ideas that are floated, even if they turn out to be not so good.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Just their ideas.
And I've already done all... Don't worry about any formatting, just type line by line by line, enter. So all I need. Thank you. If we've got enough seats down here, if you haven't got enough, if you can sit, if the people in the row behind can just move back a little and the people who are involved in the team stay at the front, that would be good, because I want to involve you. Now, the microphones probably are going to be more needed down the front now on each side because of that. Yep, so there's a couple of seats over here still, if anyone wants to come down there. I've got some notepads. It'll be easier writing as you go, so... Now, the general process of what we'll be going through with every team is this. We're going to firstly ask you what you thought of through this process of what this team would be involved in.
Remember that was your homework.
And the second thing we're going to do is talk to you about what we feel will be also involved in the particular team. And then the third thing we'll do is try to determine some future direction for the particular team. Whether that be appointing a team leader or not is really not the main point at this point, but rather, you know, when are you going to meet next? What are you going to do? What's going to be a project that is an important project? Now, with the environment team, we've already been doing a lot of work with the environment team already. Dennis, why are you not here? Dennis is currently its team leader, so he needs to be here. There's one over there then.
I was wondering why he was hiding.
You might change your mind.
I thought
that. Yeah. That's okay, you can change your mind. It's a voluntary job, you know that. So basically that's our plan of action for each team. And we've got usually an hour to a couple of hours for each team to discuss. And the reason why we want to do it this way is just to give you some background and knowledge about what you'll be involved in and what's actually happening with the team in terms of developments at this point. Now, with the environment team, we've already been working with Dennis and the team and some members of the team currently on our property. Now, the reason why we've been doing that is because our property is a smaller property, like a 40-acre property. It's easy to get things onto it and move things around. You don't need lots of machinery to do it, and you can do a lot of things by hand. And so what we've been doing is showing people different things on the property in terms of the things that will be involved in the learning team, the environment learning team. But what we'd like to do is now just open it to you guys, and if we could have the microphones down, you might need to just stand next to the lines. If you just be careful of the camera on this side. Thanks, Aroko. And you might just need to hand it around so that we can record their thing. So who would like to start with regard to what you feel is involved in the team? And what's, Glenys is going to just take some notes as we go. Far away.
Do you want me to take notes as well?
I can, you can.
Oh. Okay, so unlike what you said earlier about being totally in an environment where you learn about plants and soil in a kind of a lab condition setting and being told what to do and everything, what I've been learning is that it's all about love. That it's all about not expecting to get anything, but actually loving the earth and loving the plants that are growing there, and not expecting to get from them, but actually to give. And
yep.
When you were talking about this, Yeshua, last week, how to feel your emotions about how we've just been pillaging and raping and taking and causing this environmental damage.
Yep.
It really brought me to my emotions about that, how I've lived my life. I've just always taken everything from everyone and never ever gave back. And so the remorse that it got me to was that I now see the environment and everything around me in this way, where it's all just been raped and pillaged, really. And it's about giving love and have no expectations, no demands, but just to give and love.
Yep.
Thank you.
So if we could just write down no expectations and demands as another point. Because a very important point this in the environment theme is it's about giving back, giving to the earth and giving to the environment, not just to the earth, to the complete environment, right? And as soon as you have a demand, you're no longer giving. So for instance, if you plant a mango tree so that it bears mangoes so you can eat the mangoes, you now have a demand. It's no longer loving. And of course that tree is not going to do as well as if it had a totally had no expectations. Does that make sense? Now, all of the things God's created give us the want to do what they desire to do for us. God created them to do those things. But as soon as we put the demand on them, it's like, how do you feel when you have a demand on you? Doesn't it feel pretty yucky? Like all of you ladies, when the guy demands sex from you, how does that feel? Well, if you can remember
depends
that...
Depends on how we feel.
It depends on how you feel about it, I suppose. But for many of you, the demand feels pretty bad, right? So if you can just remember that every time you have a demand of a tree to produce some fruit for you, you're projecting almost the same thing at that tree. And the tree is not going to enjoy that very much. Does that make sense? So very important thing to learn. Yes, the environment team will be focusing on giving to the environment, not on receiving from the environment.
Which is really difficult to do because that's all we've ever known. Plants are there to serve us, not that we're serving a purpose with them, you know.
Yep. Many of you in the past have planted fruit trees in your garden because you want them to bear fruit. Have you not?
Yeah.
Right? We won't be having that focus. Ironically, the trees will bear more fruit.
Yep, and we'll appreciate them as such a gift.
Yep.
Then, at the moment, it's like a demand that we want met, and if they don't, then bad tree. You know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, Dinah, just as the mic comes down your way. Yep.
I feel it's about where we're helping to create God's kingdom on earth, and so for me, it's being self-reflective and learning about what we've talked about in the sense of how my emotions and my injuries contribute to the damage that's already there.
Yep.
And I can pray about that and ask for God's guidance and God's truth.
Yes, so very important that the environment team has a focus on the emotions and how the emotions are damaging what they're doing. So for example, many of you in your own properties have been like doing this or doing that, not realizing that actually your emotions are working in the total opposite direction as to what you're doing. So if my emotions are like really angry and frustrated, for example, I'm working automatically my environment is feeling this. And automatically my environment is acting in a certain way as a result of my feeling. And in the team, you're going to have to come to terms with how the emotions and the injuries are affecting everything. So one of the things we've been doing on the property is we've been even noting down the names of the people who dug the hole. And what happens to that hole? And what happens to the plant that gets put in that hole? Does that make sense?
And we'd actually ultimately like to be very scientific about this, to recognise, when we have this emotion, this is specifically how it affects the plant.
Or so how it even specifically affects that kind of plant. Right? So there'll be things that are emotional within us that affect only a certain type of plant in a certain way. And we want to actually finish up documenting the relationships between.
So in the end, there's a body of information that can be taught to other people about how when you enter interaction with the earth, with certain sets of emotions, how that specifically affects the environment around you.
Yep.
And how when you change it, that's the really exciting bit, how when we change that, how that impacts.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Good. If I go across and then if we have the other mic, back up at Joy.
Waste management is a huge one. So it's not just worms and compost, but also perhaps designing spaces where accelerate plastic decay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But also using creative forms, so like plastic is really good in bean bags, so plastic bags.
Mm-hmm.
So there's creative side to it, but there's also the scientific side to
exactly.
Yep. Waste management.
So waste management will be divided into two areas. We're going to be looking at natural waste, like human and animal waste, but we'll also be looking at more toxic forms of waste, right the way through to waste with regard to radioactive waste, right? And how we can deal with all of those things in a loving manner. Does that make sense? So there'll be some science involved with a lot of this, which we'll want to investigate at some point.
But on all the learning centres, we want to be responsible for all of the waste that is created. Anything that comes on doesn't go off. We have to deal with it on site.
So we're going to need to take a lot of care about what goes on. But also we have to take a lot of care about what goes on the property.
I'm really excited about that part.
Yeah. You see, coming up, there's going to be a lot of waste on the planet due to natural disasters and so forth. And if we are already quite well versed about how to deal with a lot of these different forms of waste, we're not going to have fear related to those forms of waste, and we'll also have a great ability to assist the process of the environment recovering. Right? So it's a very important part of the environment team. You can see already that once we start dealing with the other issues, you can see one team may have many sort of sub-teams, if you like, or sub-areas of interest that will all need to be incorporated at some point. Yep. Joy was the next person.
It's about feeling what's most loving for any particular plant or situation or...
So no, can we just write down no rules?
Yeah.
No rules.
No preconceived
rules.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's a soul connection.
What we found happening with the team is we'd show them a certain way to do the holes for preparing a plant, and then from then on everyone's trying to make a rule about it. But why are they trying to make a rule about it? Because they're not feeling what's going on in that particular region. Every single part of the environment is different, and it has different needs and different problems associated with it. And if we are not connected emotionally to our emotions, we will not feel the difference in that particular location, and we'll try to apply the same rules rather than different rules to each circumstance. And so what we're going to do is more and more connect to the people involved, will connect more and more to what they feel should happen here. Right? And in the place of feeling what should happen, there is generally a lot more spirit inspiration as well as to what should happen. Does that make sense? So that's pretty important in the process. So let yourself feel what's going on. Now, there are going to be principles involved, of course. So you'll find out lots of different things about the principles involved in caring for the environment, but you can't make rules. We've got many of you are still tempted to make rules because why do we like rules? Because we don't have to feel them.
You feel safer.
Does that make
sense? I'll get it right. Yep.
Yeah. So this is where we've got to be quite careful. Now, that being said, there was another thing we learnt last week, Tuesday. What was that? Remember when I dug my swale that I did last Tuesday, and what did you learn in that process? Laureen, if we can just come down.
That when we do something, we do it with a lot of love, and we're giving into it, and when we're in that loving space, we'll know how to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And because of the love that we have, we'll do it thoroughly. We won't try to cut corners and try to just do it, you know. We're very concerned about being thorough but economical at the same time. And this is something that we need to, if we're connected to our love of ourself, everything we create will actually be like a mirror of how we love ourselves. And so what happened initially is I said, I just scratched the dirt up a bit and said, right, go ahead and dig some swales. And the teams got together and dug some swales, but most of the swales weren't going to work. And I come back and I said to the team, just stop for a moment. We all sat down, said, most of these swales are not going to do anything. The water's just going to run straight off of them. Like, why weren't you feeling that when you dug it? Right? And we had to start looking at what's going on. When we start going into manual labour, a lot of the times we start detuning from the feeling and logical processes that are still there within our soul. And the reason why we do that is because we are so focused on the task or getting the task over and done with that we don't have a feeling of love towards the task.
And we're not connected to our bodies.
We're not connected to our bodies as a result. We need to stay connected to ourselves in the process. There's a lot more involved in this team in terms of externals. So let's talk about some of those externals. Can we do that?
I'm not sure what you mean by externals, but what
not to do with your own soul, but yeah. Now.
Well, what I'm thinking of with the environment, I just would just love to create an environment that is very attractive to animals.
Okay, so yep, fauna attracting.
Habitat.
So it's all ecosystems and habitats.
Yeah, including butterflies and insects.
Of course.
Yep.
Right the way across
frogs
the board.
And the whole work, yeah.
Yep, so that's very, very important. So, and particular insects, because insects are like the life of our planet, basically. So without the insects and the plants, we just can't survive. And so very much a focus on insects, but also the other.
Without having cockroaches in my kitchen?
Well, see, now that's an expectation of the man. You're going to put on a poor cockroach.
That's a fear, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fear, really. And what we need to do is deal with those in the process. Why is it that we're selective? We like certain animals, we like certain birds, we like certain insects, but we don't like a butterfly is an insect and a midge is an insect. What do you do with each one of them? Do you get a butterfly in your hand and go... None of you probably have ever done that in your entire life. Perhaps maybe with a moth, but certainly a butterfly. You go, ooh, look at that. Like, you know, you're wrapped that it's landed on you, right? And what do you do with the mosquito? Whack, he just goes straight away. Both of them have a loving process with you and also with their environment, and we've got to discover what those loving processes are.
And remember when I did the talk about the green tree frog, where we talked about the frogs, everyone was like, oh, the tree frog. Then cane toads came up, ugh, cane toads. Like, imagine what the toad feels. No wonder.
Why do you reckon he's got a thicker skin and a poisonous skin, basically,
yeah.
Because of our emotion about it. That's in the end what it's all about.
Yeah.
We need to come to understand that even animals evolve based upon the conditions that we place upon them. There's a talk that I'll be giving soon about how God made the process of evolution work. And it's going to cover like a good couple of hundred million years of human life. And what actually happens in terms of God's creation and how God creates. And in that talk, you will learn many things about the potentials that God makes available for organisms to evolve. And you don't realise it, but actually you are doing exactly the same thing on this planet with your attitude to certain plants and animals and birds and so forth and insects. And as part of the environment team, we'll be learning about those particular things, learning about the potentials of what we create. Does that make sense?
And creating new loving potentials. That's exciting.
Because if you bring yourself into more condition of love, more harmony with love, the potential for every one of the animals, birds, insects and all other forms of creatures, now they have a potential to grow into the same position of love. While we, the human, is in a decreased potential of love, the plants and animals and birds can't go any higher than that potential. Does that make sense? Because we are the ones who create the potential. Of course, God's already creating another potential, which we'll discuss at another time.
Creating the potential in us.
In us, for then us to affect the environment, right? But we need to understand the whole process of creation in the end, and that's a part of this team. It's a very, very fascinating subject,
yeah.
You'll find.
AJ and I had some awesome discussions about it.
Yeah. There's a lot of things we discuss that you don't get to hear of until a year or two later, perhaps. But the process of God's creation is so fascinating. And now, the reason why I find it so fascinating now is that there are people on the planet now who have no understanding of God whatsoever, who are now discovering how this works.
Scientifically. Starting to describe what we've been feeling for a long time.
So for example, you've heard in evolution how the evolution of different animals began in the water, right? And then slowly things crept onto the land and so forth. There's this whole process of development that occurred. And that whole process was guided by God through a whole process of love coming from the universe, and we can discuss the linkages of that over time, but they've actually got proof that that is the case. They've got proof that there is this process of what they call jumping evolution, where all of a sudden there was no animals with any skeletons, and then all of a sudden there's animals with external skeletons, and then there's no animals with internal skeletons, and then all of a sudden there's animals with internal skeletons, right? And through the process of evolution, these things have happened, and people don't understand why it's happening. They understand there has to be an external cause of some kind, and we'll discuss a lot of that in one of the presentations we do. But that's a part of this team. It's a really fascinating subject.
It was so fascinating that what you just said that I almost forgot what I was going to say.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Yeah. I'm mostly interested in fixing the balance and bringing back the species that are no longer there. That's my particular interest.
Yep.
I also have a question. Some time back you talked about the dinosaurs and the fact that they were never designed to eat meat. But where in the animal kingdom does it actually become a natural thing that they do, like birds eat insects and things? Is that meant to be?
We will actually, I feel, in the longer term, be creating a lot of the stuff that existed in the past as well, that is no longer existing.
Yes.
But in the shorter term, we'll be creating the environments for those things to exist, certainly.
Yes.
With regard to the animals and the birds and other creatures that have now become extinct, there is certainly a way to have those creatures back again on the planet, which we'll be addressing.
Just the insects.
Oh, what was the question about the insects?
Are birds designed to eat insects?
The insects are designed to be the food source of many creatures, actually. Insects don't have a spirit body. They only exist on the planet. And they actually collectively operate rather than individually operate. So they have a lot of what you would call a collective consciousness.
Yes.
It's not actually a consciousness. It's actually based upon the soul condition of man as to what they do.
Yes.
So part of the environment team is learning the relationships between what the animals, birds, but particularly the insects, because the insects are one of the most sensitive creatures to man's condition. What they do is going to be directly correlated with emotions that we have inside of us. And that's something that we want to eventually document, the link between the environment and our soul and what's happening with every creature in that environment.
So mosquitoes, spiders, because we fear them?
No. It's not quite that determinate. For example, you may have a certain emotion of self-attack. So if you have an emotion of self-anger or self-hatred, a mosquito will very highly likely bite you. Does that make sense? So that's not fear of them. That is actually to do with how you view yourself. So you'll find there's these relationships between different emotions and what happens with different creatures in the environment.
Right, yep. Okay. Thank
sense?
You.
Yep. There was something I wanted to mention about...
Endangered and extinct animals?
Yeah, balance is the thing that you wanted to mention mostly, isn't it? Did you write down balance?
Balance, no.
And did Retent. You get the balance? Yep, good on you. So return to balance. Now, by the way, there is this common thought that many of you have still, and I want to address at this point, and that is there's this feeling that you can't have development
and preserve
environment. In other words, you know, like we've developed as a human species. Originally, many, many thousands of years ago, most of us lived in caves or little huts. Now most of you have running water in a house, you know, where you've got a comfortable toilet to sit on. Now that's what I call development. Most development actually is positive. Many of you feel it's not. But most development is actually positive, and we want to understand the relationship between development and environment. Now there is another team called the development team. And that team will be interfacing with the environment team, and because we want to see the relationship between development and environment.
Yeah.
We're not asking you to go back and live like a caveman. We're going to actually go forward. And in fact, if we don't go forward, we are actually going backwards. Right? So we want to... there's a term that many scientists are using now. We want to develop in an anti-entropic way. In other words, a way that... no longer creates degradation. And this is something that we want to involve ourselves in.
And so there's a lot of popular environmentalist thought is very anti-development of any kind, and that is actually not a loving principle. It's an angry principle. If you can feel the anger in a lot of environmentalists, and I used to be one of them, it was very punishing. No, you've done the wrong thing and we're going to stop that. Whereas there is a loving possibility for development to continue and environment to be sustained. It's just that our world is not geared in that way.
Yep. Does that make sense? So we will stop doing the entropic forms of development, which are all degrading the human planet, the planet here and also other planets, and we'll start doing the anti-entropic type of developments that allow us to improve things, but still everything being harmonious with love and the environment. Right? And there are lots and lots of opportunities in that direction.
With that habitat and ecosystem, would biodiversity be in addition to that?
Of course, yeah.
So, yeah, biodiversity.
One of the main problems we have, particularly here in Australia, is that our diversity has been severely impacted. If you go out to the average property around us here, you might only see 3 or 4 or 5 forms of eucalypts on the average property. And the reason why that is the case is because we've ripped out all of the big ones that we could mill, and we've destroyed all of the small ones that are all flowering that have no purpose for a cattle. And what we're left with is only the stuff that allow for the meat eaters to get their cattle and do their things with. And so we also need to understand that instead of like hating the meat eaters and giving the meat eaters from, we need to love them too. So there's a whole forms of love that we need to start demonstrating right way through our environment, and it's going to be love that cures all of these problems. So that's a part. There's a major area still missing here. What is that area? If we go maybe to Robert, if it's just a microphone or an answer.
Yeah, I have an interest in just understanding each individual ecosystem that we're going to be working with. And how to accelerate all these processes with the resources we have on hand, you know.
So how to accelerate the process of recovery?
Yeah.
Yep.
But using what we have on hand, you know. So it could be in a desert, or it could be a rainforest or whatever, you know, a river system.
So using the resources we have at the mine. Mm. And with regard to process of recovery, God already has a process of recovery underway constantly. So we need to understand the process of recovery that God has. Many of you as yet are not understanding that the soil itself is a bank of thousands and thousands of year old seeds that can't regenerate at the moment. And the reason why they can't regenerate is because of our condition. Our condition precludes those particular plants and trees from actually growing, even though the seed is in the soil. And it's only the seed that's in the soil that our soul allows to grow at a particular time that will actually grow. And many of us don't understand these relationships. And we need to understand how to recover. We need to assist the process of recovery of the land rather than working against it. Many of us work against it.
Or even just leaving it to recover on
its own. We don't want to do that either. If you leave it to recover on its own, it's going to take a few more hundred years to do that. And the reason why is because if we don't firstly deal with our soul is already imposing its negative things upon the land. Just by us standing on the land, that's what we're doing. We need to understand that. There's still a major area missing here. What is it?
Seeds.
Well, seeds, yes, that is a major area. We need to write that down.
Soil
is the other major area, so we need to write down seeds and soil.
Water?
And water, of course.
Yeah.
And water. Now, let's look at the issue of soil. One of the biggest problems we have on the planet is the lack of balance in our soil. In fact, the lack of balance in our soil, scientists have recently discovered that the lack of mineral balance in our soil causes plants to be eaten by animals, birds and insects. As soon as you have a balanced soil, the plant growing in that soil immediately begins to recover and therefore not attract attack. Right? This is something we need to understand in the environment team. We need to understand the relationship between the soul and the soil. The soul has a whole group of emotions that prevent your own body from assimilating certain minerals. Do you understand that? Like, certain minerals cannot be assimilated inside of your body until you release those emotions. This is why some of you have a certain mineral, like, deficiencies in certain areas, right? Now, we need to come to understand that there's a relationship between the soul's emotion and the deficiency in our physical body of that particular mineral, and a link between that and the soil's deficiency of the same thing. You see, there's a link between all of these things. And we need to come to understand those linkages and document them, because that's going to assist people greatly in recovering from their particular emotions. And also, it means that we won't be popping vitamins and minerals anymore because we have all these deficiencies happening because of our soul.
Or putting them in the ground.
The ground will automatically recover as we deal with these particular emotions. And we need to understand this relationship between those three things. The soil is one of the biggest things. If you do nothing except fix your own soil on your own property, you will find in the future it's like a bank for the future. You don't have to plant a single tree, just fix the soil, and you'll automatically create an environment of potentials that weren't there previously. Right? The seeds. One of the problems we're facing now is firstly genetically modified seeds, which mean we buy the seed, we plant it, we grow it, but it doesn't reproduce after we've harvested. And we've got to now go back and buy the same thing again. And obviously this is unsustainable. We can't sustain life on the planet like this. So we need to focus on all of the seeds and the variety of seeds right the way through the food producing seeds, but also all the ones right the way through the diversity of mankind's seed bank. And we need to take some personal responsibility for the gathering of those particular things.
So
at the moment, myself and Mary, for example, we're buying a lot of seeds of plants that we know were in the area prior to man's interference, but now are not there, and we're buying a lot of that seed. We're not planting it yet because we still need to get work done on the soil. So the soil can, and that means working on our emotions about the minerals in the soil. So we're not planting it just yet, but having the seed available is something that's very, very important. So that's
so
part of that team.
We want to start documenting as well the seeds.
Very
that
important.
We have the descriptions of the plants and banking the seeds.
So in other words, having a place to store them, to store these seeds in a manner that we can then use later. Yep.
Water.
Now, water. Water is probably one of the most important issues in this area, isn't it? So water is so important. Now, all of you know about the scientific tests that have been done where if you love water, it changes its crystalline shape when you freeze it. Most of you know about that, right? So you understand that water and love are very synonymous in a lot of ways. And water, in fact, because it's such a simple molecular structure and one of the few stable simple molecular structures on the planet, because its molecular structure is so simple, it can be easily seen how the soul and projections from the soul affect it.
Really, it's demonstrating what the soul does to all of these things.
Does that make sense? Because all of these other things are all made by water in the end, aren't they? Like you look at all the plants, 70%, 80% water. What is your body? 70-something percent water. Right? Can you see the relationship? Right? So you can see the relationship of the feelings coming out of the person and how it affects water is going to affect everything else. So what we need to do is we need to look at the water in a lot of different aspects. We need to look at water from the point of view of sustainable supply in terms of our own sustenance. So firstly, we need to have a water system that is able to be sustained, but also able to be non-toxic so that we can consume it. So for human consumption. So the second thing we need to do is look at water in terms of how we can benefit the landscape and everything on it. So there are two different types of things there. Now there's a lot involved in this about recovering the water-based systems and getting them to a point where we hold water on land instead of letting it all run out to sea. Right? We need to hold as much of it as possible.
So watercourse recovery,
erosion and all these other things. And remember, with erosion, you're not only, as I've explained to the group that came along on Tuesday, like the ground is full of seed that's up to thousands of years old, plants that you've never seen that are all extinct now, you think. But they're actually, there's seeds still alive in the ground that's not growing at this point. Now, can you see the problem with erosion? Erosion washes all those seeds where? Out to sea, basically, in the end. Right? So that seed bank, which is in the soil, is now somewhere where we can't use it. So we need to stop erosion. We need to recover. Dealing with erosion is a major issue. So again, another area that would be involved in the environment team.
And you can see how they're all related. The water, the soil and the seeds, you just demonstrated one way in which they're all related, but there's so many ways that they're all related. Yeah.
Anything else? If we just have a mic. Is there a mic? Rather than grab the one from the front, can we have... I don't know if I've got a third receiver. No, I haven't. It's all right. We will need to grab one from the front.
Yep, Kelly, you're right.
Yeah. Thanks, Kelly.
AJ, what about understanding and working with and creating weather, climate and microclimate?
Modifying the climate?
And microclimate.
And microclimates, yes, certainly. It's a big area, actually, because... even on one piece of land, we can create vastly different ecosystems with just our choices of what we do. And we want to be able to illustrate that. If you walk over the learning centre here and you just walk over it, you'll find there's totally different areas. You can walk into some areas and you feel like, wow, this used to be a pretty good rainforest just here. And then you walk to another place and it feels like really totally different, like a temperate area. And you can feel it even in just one property. And what we need to do is understand the ecosystems. In fact, we'd love to have the learning centres be an example of four or five different ecosystems in the one centre even, rather than having a different centre for each one. Definitely an area.
And like with weather too, like drought being caused by dryness in people's hearts.
Yes, but also caused by a lot of times our own feelings of lack as well.
And taking. Which leads to a lot of clearing, which then leads to...
Yeah. In the future, actually, the world's environment is going to change quite a lot. And we will have less seasons, actually. And what's going to happen is, at the moment, the Earth's on a 22.5 degree angle, right? And as it goes around the sun and spins, that's what causes us to have a vast difference in seasons. And the poles have 6 months of the year basically in darkness, and so therefore get very cold. And so we have a large variation of temperature between the poles and the equator. So up to even 100 degrees of variation in temperature between the poles and the equator. What will happen in the future is the Earth will tilt back probably to a 6 or 7 degree angle, which means that there's going to be far less variation in the weather in terms of seasons. And so the Earth will be spinning still, of course, but now there's not that huge variation, and it's highly likely that the poles will actually completely melt as a result. So, and it's highly likely you could actually live in the poles as well as live in the equator, and there'll be a very, very much lower differentiation in temperature. Now, as a result of that, the weather systems will be far more milder. So we won't have huge fluctuations in weather systems. We won't have as many things like cyclones or, you know, very disastrous weather systems occurring because all of those are caused by the large differential in temperature, and therefore, and by fluctuations in water currents as a result of the differential in temperature. So these things will change, and what we need to do in the environment section is learn how to adapt and change with these particular requirements of the external requirements of the Earth. So that's part of what we'll be doing too. If we could have up the back there, yeah. Anna. Sorry.
Are deserts man-made or are they made by God?
Well, the issue we face with deserts is that, of course, the Earth never had as big a desert as we have now. And as most of you are aware, you know, it's caused by a lot of the degradation of the environment. However, there are a lot of animals and birds and other creatures that live in the deserts permanently, and of course some of those ecosystems can be maintained. There is a way though to beautify the deserts but retain most of those, or all of those ecosystems. And that's something eventually we'd like to have, for example, a learning centre in the middle of the Simpson Desert here in Australia, or in the middle of the Sahara or something like that, and show how man can live in beautiful comfort in the middle of what seems to be a harsher environment. In the longer term, I feel the deserts will slowly disappear, and that's something we want to maintain to a degree, because we want to retain some of the diversity that's in them, and help those animals and plants survive, particularly the plants, the animals and reptiles in those locations survive. If we go across to Elaine.
I was wondering about the seeds. You talked about all of this, the seed bank in the soil. Mm-hmm. And then I had thought about, there is a saying that some seeds need fire in order to germinate them or allow them to open up. Will that no longer be the case? Is that just a fear-based thing?
Yeah, the truth is that there are no seeds on the planet that need fire to germinate, but some do germinate better after a fire, and certainly...
Will that continue to be the case?
Again, as we raise the potential of our soul, we can't really fully predict what will be the future for many of these plants that are currently have their certain... So, for example, I don't know whether a prickly pear will remain prickly, for example. Because, you know, as the soul condition of everybody changes, there has been some experiments done with prickly pear where somebody projected love at it for a year and it dropped all of its prickles. So we don't know the effect, and this is one of the things we want to document, and this is why the documentation team is going to be quite important, the team, that, the records team that we talk about this afternoon. We want to document the relationships between the soul changing and what happens environmentally. So I can't answer those questions fully without obviously having our souls change and seeing what the results are. My feelings are that no plant needs a fire to germinate in the long run. That would probably be the case, but I don't know that for certain. Yeah. Yeah. Jen,
my question comes from the other side, from the spirits who yep. were involved in Findhorn.
Yep.
They're asking, is there a space for them to have a voice in this whole process so that they may grow from the place?
Yeah, we would love for them to be involved in this process. Any spirit, even it doesn't matter if they've embraced the divine love path or not, just like any person on earth, who, whether they've embraced the divine love path or not, we would love them to be involved in the process if they want to be. And there'll be a group of mediums through which they can speak to and speak about many of these aspects. However, one thing they will need to be aware of is that we'll be focused primarily on the soul first and its power, not on the changing things physically or externally. So there are a lot of things I've suggested for the Findhorn project and other projects on the planet where people had to follow a certain task in order to have an outcome. What they'll need to do is investigate far more thoroughly the relationship between the emotion in the soul and the outcome. And
they've also, these spirits have also assisted things at Findhorn to grow and generate through using their
energy.
And so this is a different process for us. We want to focus on our own souls and how spirits can assist us to develop our souls.
So while we're happy to have spirits assist a certain area of the Learning Centre to grow, we would like to know that they're assisting that particular
exactly.
area
yep.
so that we can document the relationship.
Between.
We don't want them to have it grow just so that everybody on the earth feels good about it all growing, but nobody really understanding why. Does that make sense? So we want there to be truth involved in these interactions with what's happening between what the spirits are doing and what's going on Earth. At the moment, a lot of that truth is not present. What's happening is there's almost a falsifying of information because the spirits are pouring a lot of energy into those particular plants. They're all growing. And the person looking after those plants saying, well, I've got something going on there. Look at that, you know. And in reality, it's got nothing to do with the individual, but got everything to do with the spirits that are looking after it. And what we need to do is make sure that there is a correlation between the soul of the people on earth and what's going on with the material. As they know, they've tried to do different things in the past and they've felt the opposition of the person working on the project. And what we want to do is work in harmony so that if they can feel the opposition emotionally of the person, then that opposition is addressed, so that we can assist the process of growth. And this is something the team will be looking at as well.
There is large groups of divine love spirits who are very excited about this project. I've spoken to them and they're very excited to project healing at land where people are acting in desire and harmony with divine love. They really want to support us in that process. So that's really
good. I have the feeling here that there's quite a big group of natural love spirits too that feel that perhaps their process with Findhorn was not entirely
pure.
Completely fulfilled and pure
yep.
and they have the desire to grow and learn
yep.
and move forward also.
Yeah, and so any spirit yeah. is encouraged to be involved as well as any person, but the principles being the same. If the spirit's not in a condition of love, they're not in a condition of, you know, demand and expectation, they're welcome. If they're in a condition where they project anger or upset or hatred or you know, expectation or demand, then we'll be addressing that with those spirits. And you know, that's something we'll be going through, just the same as we would any other person involved.
Yeah. With Michelle Smallwright and Perilandra in America, she always referred to the plants as having like the rogue deva and the, you know, the mushroom deva or the whatever. Was she actually just connecting with spirits?
I don't understand the question.
No.
She created a whole garden and she connected with the devas, connected with each plant
right.
type.
Yeah.
And she called them the deva of the rose or whatever, and they communicated with her and allowed her to make, you know, healing essences and stuff like that.
Yes. Pretty obvious.
Spirit. It was just spirits.
Yes.
Yeah.
There are literally millions of spirits who were just involved. They loved a certain thing when they were on Earth, like a rose or they loved some other plant while they were on earth. And now anybody who wants the rose to grow well, then that spirit comes and helps their rose grow well and all those kind of things. And they even talk to the people about, you know, and the people think they're talking to the plant, but in reality they're talking to the spirit, just another spirit. And we want to stop all of those transactions occurring, because we want the transactions to be in harmony with truth, not in the harmony with the error like that. That's an erroneous-based feeling and thinking in the end. And we want to help that spirit move on or progress. We want to help the people on earth see the relationship between their own condition and what's happening with the plant. And these are very, very important things we want to get across to. And the way to do this is through the process of truth. We need to be truthful in these interactions.
So it's different having a spirit come and teach us and talk to us about the plant, because they have been fascinated in it for centuries. It's very different than if we call that the deva or the, you know, then we start getting away from the truth.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. And if we come down.
Colleen.
Thanks, Colleen. Thanks, Roko, for handing it over.
The question is, have you incorporated food into all of this, or is that going to be separate? Or?
Yes, it's one area that we haven't mentioned. So let's put that down. Food production. The truth is, though, that actually if we do everything else with the condition of love, food production will become automatic, actually. And, you know, we won't need to really focus on food production per se, but it is a part of the team's responsibility, certainly.
Will there be in the beginning a separation?
So you're worried that you won't have any food at the beginning?
As I progress, I understand a bit more, and I can feel more. But in the beginning, if I don't, I'm going to starve, right?
Well, see, that's just a fear, Lorraine. Yeah. That's not. You see, what we're often doing on the path is we're going, yeah, but AJ's presenting the perfect situation, and we're not perfect. We're in this situation, so we've got to do this now. I don't agree with you.
Got to make a shortcut now, so that we're safe.
I don't agree with that.
Pretty fear-based sort of feeling, yeah.
Yeah. We do what we know to be loving now, and everything will work out in the end. Guaranteed. So, for example, like I said to you, if you only fix the soil on your backyard where you've got your house, even rented house, or not, makes no difference. You fix the soil and nothing else, you do nothing else, guaranteed you'll have enough food come the future. Right? But you see, if we have, I'm worried about food and I'm worried about having enough and I'm worried about this. Now what are we projecting? Fear. What is fear? Love? No. So can you see straight away we're working against what we think we're trying to achieve? And this is something we need to understand.
Can you see how cool this whole Teams thing is going to be? You really get to feel what is love in action in every moment of my daily life.
See, when you think about it, many of you have had a lot of experience with growing things, have you not? But how many of these things have you thought of that we've just discussed this morning? How many of those things you thought of? You see, this is the thing, is that a lot of times we think we know what we need to know about a whole area of things, but unless we've got this ability to put away what we know and just incorporate it in understanding about the soul and the future, all these other things will be added to you. All this other understanding will come to you. And you won't need to fear in that process. Many of you are quite afraid about the future, quite afraid. Well, you know, many of you, what happened when the floods came? And you couldn't go to the shop and you couldn't go out here and you couldn't go there. And now, many of you felt quite afraid in that place. Not just afraid about food. Many of you weren't afraid about food at all, but you were afraid about, you felt constrained and restricted. And you felt like controlled and, you know, a lot of other things by the environment. Well, these are all emotions just to get rid of, because once you get rid of them, you won't feel any of those feelings. Yeah? And that's all part of the environment as well.
So if we keep taking actions in harmony with love in all of these different areas, all of our emotions are going to get triggered. If we stay true to love, then it will be. If we start making little sacrifice here because, hey, I'm not at one with God,
like
yet,
I've got to produce some food because we're worried.
Yeah, we've stepped out of the line of love, and how can we trigger ourselves the most there? It's just not going to happen.
Now, what you do on your own properties is up to you, but on the Learning Centre, there'll be no action taken out of harmony with love. So we're not going to produce food for the sake of producing food, for example. Does that make sense? We feel that if we have a loving feeling towards the environment will sustain huge amounts of food in the end for us if we want it. But if we have that focus, we are now living in fear, and that's not a loving thing to do in the environment. Yeah. And this is where we'll learn a lot about love and in the process learn a lot about our emotions and the impact they have. Yeah. If we go to Lindy over the corner up there. Right up.
Lindley,
if you keep your hand up there, Lindley.
I just want to know what the interaction between built environment, example, shelter or buildings or even structures for human comforts, like a seat or anything like that that's built, how that... Is that something that needs to be looked at in relation to how it interacts with the environment?
Certainly it won't be the environment team's domain, though. It'll be the construction team's domain.
But naturally the environment team and the construction team would be looking to work lovingly in harmony.
Yep.
So it would be a responsibility of both teams to consider those two.
Oh, actually, on the Learning Centre, Brad, did you get the message that I... You got that message? Do you want to do anything about it, or...?
Yeah,
okay, no worries. We will be taking down most of the current structures on the property, the Learning Centre here, because they are done with a lot of unlovingness in them, and also, in some cases, in the wrong areas.
Just impractical.
So just impractical. And love isn't impractical either. So we will be making a lot of changes to the current place as well as a result. Now, some things we'll just leave there until such time as we've got a team to take them down. But we want to get as much of the stuff that's been done on the property away so that we're left with it almost like a landscape we can live in harmony with love with. And the construction team, it's very important the construction team understands the soul's purpose and understands the relationship between love and what they're constructing. Yep.
And this is the beautiful thing about love. Not only is it logical it is the most logical. If we're in harmony with love, it is the most logical and practical thing. That is the most loving thing. A lot of people think loving is, it's highfalutin or it's not practical in the everyday world. If it's really loving, it'll be the most logical and practical thing at the same time.
You think about when you one thing that attracts many of you males along to these seminars is because you're finding the divine truth much more practical than New Age philosophy. Haven't you found that for many of you males? And the truth is, well, yeah, but oftentimes the women are more attracted to sometimes the fairy stuff or the furry stuff, you know. But the reality is, everything God does is practical. Everything, everything God does has a logical and reasonable purpose behind it every time. And so we need to understand the link between love and logic. And those kind of linkages are always in place in the environment. So when it comes to the construction team, which we'll be having after the lunch break, we'll talk a lot more about what will be involved in the construction team. Yep. Anything else we can cover here?
Tuna got at the back.
Tim.
Yeah, I understand the ocean's obviously part of the environment. I just wondered if you had any sort of envisions for what an action team might be involved in with something like the ocean.
with the ocean, obviously, current, initially it's going to be a bit more difficult because of the earth changes that will occur and the damage that will occur to the ocean. And so there is going to need to be a lot of stuff to do with the environmental damage that's happened in the ocean, and also what mankind's, how mankind's actions have polluted it. But that is something that will probably leave to a bit later in time. But it is certainly something, if somebody has a passion in that area, that we'd like to have a sort of sub-team start to work on now.
Because also oceans are ecosystems and habitats, aren't they? And the waste.
Are the largest ecosystems and habitats. Yeah. In fact, the ocean produces most of our oxygen. Yeah. So, and you know that's obviously going to be an issue in the future as well. If the ocean is harmed, or you know, particularly with mankind's pollutants, then the ocean's going to be severely disrupted from producing what it currently produces.
So we could say oceans and large bodies of water?
Yeah, so I put a lot of that under the water area, but the ocean is unique in that it is just like a living environment, yeah. As is all other water systems, really. Yeah. So it's quite a lot for the team so far, yeah. How many of you have passion for this team now? Yeah, see how we start sort of getting bigger and going, there's a lot in there that I wouldn't mind being involved in, right? If we have Mike down there.
Rose. Yeah,
thanks.
And then maybe Joy on this side for after Rose, yeah.
So if we have another mic here.
We haven't spoken about flora yet, and I'm wondering if that comes under the seed section. I'm just wondering, are we going to be encouraging flowers for their sheer beauty?
Well, flora involves all forms of plants, light, obviously, and obviously that's going to be a huge part of the environmental team. And in fact, without plant life, no other life is sustainable. Without the plants and the insects working together, no other life is sustainable. So there is a definite, obviously a huge amount of things that we'll be looking at there, including like Mary's writing up now, the healing power of all of these different plants. Every plant has a specific purpose, including a purpose for your own soul. And we need to understand the relationships between the healing purposes of these plants and what's happening to our body, but also what happens to the soul. And smell, there's some basic things that we need to understand in here about smell and sound. Smell and sound.
And that's another area.
So music is another area we need to address in this team. But particularly the two senses of smell and sound, and the other sense of hearing, sound, they're the two things that we need to focus on and what effect that has on the environment.
And this is where, for example, a number of teams might work together, the environment team and the arts team, because this same group of spirits communicated to me that we would do a project that involved voice and healing of the environment. So that's something I'm sure we're going to do sometime. So,
that makes sense. Poor Glenys there is just saying, go and pull at it. You're doing really well, actually.
Yeah.
That's good, thank you. Yeah.
So sound and smell, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, the senses of hearing and smell, very important part of this team. Yeah. If we go to Linda, we're going to Joy next, sorry. And Linda's behind.
Another subsection of flora is specifically using grasses and plants to recreate a natural mulching system to support
to create soil,
of growth and soil.
Yeah, yeah. Many of you are so used to using manure on your planting systems, are you not? You know, you go and get your bag of manure and this. Do you think this is going to be available to you in the future? Imagine for a moment that you had no car to go and pick up the manure with, and you had no vehicles to travel, and you don't even really have any cart or trailer to do it in. How are you going to manure your garden? Well, obviously you're going to have to come up some other ways other than going to get the manure, aren't you? And so what we're going to do is set up some sustainable ways of doing that, which we've already begun doing. By the way, your own manure is one sustainable way, believe it or not. And we'll talk about how to turn your own manure into something that can be used and you don't have to worry about the bacteria or other problems with regard to human manure if you process it correctly.
Humanure.
There's a lovely book called Humanure. You've read it, haven't you, Graham?
Graham borrowed it.
The guy who wrote it's pretty funny too, isn't he? He describes how he was feeding somebody strawberries and...
He had people over for dinner from England.
Yeah, that's right.
And he started explaining his gardening regime and they stopped mid-mouth and went, "We can't eat shit!"
But there's a lot to be said. And in fact, part of all of this too, of course, things like the insect life and the worms and all of these other things that are all part of the food production system we need to learn about. So there's all to do with worms, insects, learning how to actually turn things that are sometimes fairly toxic to us into something that's totally okay for the environment and in fact beneficial to the environment.
We haven't really talked much about fauna.
No, we haven't talked at all yet about fauna, have we? Very little. Because that's a part of this team too.
Yeah.
So do we want to mention some things about fauna?
Would you want to
we need to rub
the
some
questions
of those.
First. I might just do this.
So Linda was next, wasn't she?
Yeah, what about landscaping and combining like art, and creating with and beautifying, having a picture of what you desire the environment to look like?
Yeah, good point, because in the spirit world what we do actually is we create landscapes that tell you or teach you something about the universe. And so you can create landscapes in such a way as incorporating all these different ecosystems, but that actually teach you something as you walk through it. And this is something we definitely would like to do.
So that would be an area, like a specific team?
Well, it's a mixture again of the arts team and the environmental team.
So you might have a project that involves the arts team and the environment team, and the project is to develop a garden that teaches through visuals and sounds and smells.
Yep.
And so then you would work together, both teams, on that project.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yep. If we go to Karen.
I've never had a problem peeing and pooing on my own bit of land, but that confused me when you started talking about conforming to the laws of man, where you have to have certain septic systems and all sorts of stuff.
No, I'm not referring to certain septic systems. I didn't in this discussion.
No, not in this discussion, but in the past when...
No, in some places on the learning centres at the moment, we will have to conform with the law of the land. So, for example, if we want to put on a manager's residence on the property, then the manager's residence will have to have a sewage system that is certified by the law of the land at this point. Now, in the future, after different things happen and probably after earth changes happen, that's going to be far less important. However, the safety aspects of using human manure, particularly human manure of humans that are eating meat still, needs to be addressed.
As you know, the communicable disease was vastly reduced by the introduction of sewage,
treatment,
waste management. So, there is an issue of development there. We need to manage and be loving and thoughtful with the way we.
So we don't want fecal matter, for instance, getting into our water systems that we're then drinking.
Yeah.
And so we need to have some way of processing all of these different things. But there are loving ways to do it, and there is unloving ways to do it.
Yeah.
If we go to Lorraine down the front there. If we have the mic, just a moment.
It might be incorporated in it, but I'm not sure whether it's fear-based. But it's about if the weather's changing, do we need clothing, and the clothing from plants and not animals? And
very, very good question. And the answer, of course, is yes. You're going to probably still need clothing, and you still probably want to have clothing. And while sexual projection is still happening, you definitely want to have clothing. So, you know.
Do we have a manufacturing team anymore, or did we scrap
it? It's a development. It's part of the development team. We'll be developing all sorts of things like that. Does that make sense? Now, of course, they will need to be with the environment team, because the environment team will produce a lot
of
what
the
development
material.
Team use to develop into something that we use or produce what we use. So the purpose of the development team is very wide as well, much wider than what most people might realise at this point. But the environment team will provide a lot of the raw material, if you like, that others will then develop into the different areas. And one of them will be clothing, of course. Yep. Can I just get everyone back to the fauna, because we haven't covered that.
We've just mentioned it briefly.
We've only mentioned it briefly, but it's part of this team. So what do you feel about this, the fauna team? Anna, thanks. What's the time?
I've
got half an hour yet.
Yep. Making trees for food and homes for animals?
Yes. Very important. So there's a combination between what do the... In fact, we're going to be even more focused on what the animals, birds, lizards, snakes, insects and everything else needs than we are on what we need. Because you'll find that if you love everything else, they automatically produce what you need. Does that make sense? And we need to get away from this focus of I'm producing what I need first and then I do what everybody... Forget about that, because that won't be happening very much. We'll be producing firstly what the animals, birds, the ecosystem needs. Soil, everything, the ecosystem needs. Then, once we've created all of those habitats, you'll find they will automatically produce what we need. Does everyone understand that? So it'll be a totally different focus. So most of the time when we go along to a land or something, we're looking at what do I need first from that. You know, we're going to challenge that emotion in you. Of what do I need first, and creating habitat for everything else, and then seeing what that gives as a result. You see, every time you give a gift to it, you find many gifts come in return anyway.
And in order to do that well, we're going to have to learn a lot, aren't we? We're going to have to seek to understand and know what's there and what they need. So there's going to be a lot of learning and seeking to understand and know.
So part of that's going to be like an endangered species programs, if we can be involved in those. These will be internal to the learning centres, but also external, because we want to get back a lot of the species and create environments for those species to exist. The big problem, the reason why most of our species in Australia are becoming extinct very rapidly, in fact we have one of the worst reputations on the planet for destroying ecosystems, believe it or not, even though many of you might not agree with that, we are actually have one of the worst reputations.
I have a cynical comment about that, though.
You have a cynical comment? Yeah. What's a cynical comment, babe?
That most of them have been thrashed to death in Europe before they started recording.
True. Man, we come from this European background, which is really a conquering background. So we go into an environment and what we do is we conquer it. We try to get rid of all the things we don't like. We introduce all the things we do. And we destroy a lot in the process.
When at around New Year's, we had a couple dear friends who visited us from England, and we all went to Armidale to Kyabra down there to see the Lytton Hitchens. And when we were there, Peter did a channeling of an Aboriginal guy who'd lived on his land 300 years ago, and it was pretty amazing channeling. And he was talking about all of the species of lizards and birds and plants that were actually on that land 300 years ago. And he said the colours of the birds were so varied that, but also the colours of the flowers on the plants were so varied that it was like a rainbow almost everywhere. And the birds had habitat that they were camouflaged in, or that they, you know, fitted
into. So you couldn't even see the bird when they were sitting in the tree, because the tree had all the same characteristics the bird had. And now in Australia, you notice we have huge amounts of colourful birds. but they're all very stark against the background, which is all just primarily green. But, and the reason why is because those colourful birds used to blend into an environment that's no longer existing.
And we began to reflect on the colours of the common birds, black, brown, grey. They're the most common birds. And in England, we were talking about what birds they have there, and almost all of the birds that remain in England are grey, brown or black. Yeah. And we're just reflecting on the timeline, you know, that...
See, England's destruction happened 5,000 years ago, it began.
Yeah.
Whereas ours began only 300 years ago. So you wonder what our birds are going to look like in 5,000 years if we don't do something, you see. Yeah. Remember about potentials that I mentioned earlier? A loving potential raises the potential of everything. An unloving potential degrades the potential of everything. You see, you can see this scientific process at play constantly on the earth right now. And we want to improve that. If we come down to Robert and then back up to Joy.
Just an observation really, where I've noticed that the animals are a very large part of the fertiliser system for our...
Definitely.
You know, without them, yeah.
Yeah.
So you see a bird land in a tree, and what's the first thing it does? You know, it's...
Let's one go.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And the wallabies, you know, wallabies around our place, they're fertilising the whole ground all the time.
Yeah. But the primary fertiliser of the ground is obviously plants.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to... really encourage that process a lot. We need diversity, a lot more diversity than we have in our plants. So that's something that obviously the environmental team will have a focus on as well. Can you see, for those of you who have been coming along to our sessions every Tuesday, there's a lot more to learn, hey? Yeah, we've only just started scratching the surface. So there's a lot more to learn about the environment and that, you know, the how everything fits together with regard to the environment and our own soul. Yeah. Any other comments? If we go up the back and then down to Anto. So right up the back. If you know. That's Renee, isn't it?
Yep.
Renee.
What's going to happen to a saltwater fish?
Sorry?
A saltwater fish?
Obviously, we'd love to, as we, our comments to Tim earlier about the oceans, we'd love to do a lot of work with the oceans. But we've also got to initially look at what we have available to us. And obviously, we're living, you know, 150 kilometres inland from the ocean. So obviously, we'll start in this area and then work our way away. But in the end, what I would love to see is a whole group of people totally, understanding the ocean completely, the ocean environment completely. And that, talking about that and dealing with that is a whole, that's almost a whole area in itself that needs quite a few hours of discussion itself. But it is the life of our planet as well. And so it is a huge area that we need to focus on. As I said though, there's going to be huge damage to the ocean coming up. Aiding places in the ocean, we're going to have to be very selective initially as to what we aid in the ocean to recover. And the reason why is that there is going to be a lot of radioactivity as a result of different things occurring in the future. And there's going to be other problems like that, toxic environmental problems that unfortunately affect the ocean more than any other location. And we obviously want to be able to deal and address that. At this point, what we would love is to have a part of the team being involved in the investigation of toxicity in the oceans and the potential toxicity of the future in the oceans, and looking at ways that we can begin to address that now. And because if we have a team collecting that information, at least we have that information available to us come the time when we need it.
Thanks.
Yeah. Anything else? Igor.
I
Question about radiation affecting us. Why does radiation affect us?
Well, yeah, it's all emotional actually, Igor, as to why radiation affects us.
And how to prevent.
And we need to investigate the relinkages emotionally between the emotions and the radiation. And there are also some plants that we can grow that actually reduce radiation thousands of times. Sunflower seeds is one of those. So we need to also address those particular issues as well, like what happens with regard to radiation and why.
So would this would possibly be a project between the soil team and the...
Certainly. There'll be a lot of projects involving the soil team and the environment team. The soil team is going to be really focused upon human health. And obviously there's a lot of things that in the environment that can fix things in the human health if we address them. And so there's going to need to be a relationship between those two teams. Yeah. So how's that scope feel? There's a lot of areas of interest in there, isn't there? And obviously we haven't covered them all. Anto, you would like to...
How do you address humans' desire for ownership and the boundaries that they've put around, all the fencing and how it impacts it?
Yeah, that is one area we would definitely be addressing. Obviously, we'll be taking away all of our fences at the centre. So all of you who are hoping that the centre becomes a sanctuary you can run to might find that you might be better off running somewhere else if you're in that much fear. The truth is we want to take down the barriers. What happened in the property before this period of time was that each person set up their own little area, and then each person started having ownership over that particular area, and that created a lot of damage. Actually, the people involved, as I discussed with Graham during the week, the people involved in that process have yet to deal with their emotions about that process and why that happened, and what we'd like to do is encourage those people to do that. And the truth is the effect of our injuries, our emotional injuries, have a huge effect on the decisions we make on the land we have. Whether you own land privately or collectively, the emotional feelings you have a huge effect on the decisions you have on that land. And
we want to measure the effects that it has.
Yeah, definitely. We want to be scientific in these processes that we encourage as well. So, yeah, that is a huge issue that we wish to address. Many of you don't feel attracted. Some of you don't feel attracted to helping out on the learning centre unless it has a personal benefit to yourself. And that's a feeling of ownership as well. And we want to, you know, address those particular issues. And in fact, we will be emotionally addressing a lot of those issues in you. When we notice the motive is not pure, or we notice the motive is not loving, we will address that with you.
Which is the cool bit, hey? That's how you get to grow in love.
When earth changes
hold it towards you like that.
When earth changes take place,
yep.
Is it likely there'll be less day and night, or vice versa? And how will that affect the growing of things? Or is it again just all the condition of the soul, no matter whether it's dark or light?
Well, initially there's going to be a lot of material in the air, which will obviously create certain environmental issues for us to handle. So it's highly likely there will be 3 super volcanoes at least going off on the planet, and that will produce lots of ash in the air and so forth. But it's highly likely those things will also be put out quite rapidly as well due to shifts in the earth. And so we can't really predict fully what is going to happen to the environment in the initial space. After the earth rotates back into a different alignment, which is, we feel probably, well, the spirits at this point feel that it'll probably be around 15 degrees back. So it'll have about a 7 degree offset in alignment rather than a 22 degree, which means that the Earth's surface is going to be more uniformly temperatured. and more uniformly lighted as well. So in reality, we should have an improvement in our ratio of day versus night, particularly in the northern and deep southern hemispheres. So obviously in the equator, they always have a pretty even constant, because of the angle that hardly affects the equator, has a pretty even constant rotation of day and night. But on the poles, the more north you go, the more south you go, obviously depending on what season it is, you have more darkness or more light. And that there will be less of that, so there will actually be more of a uniform process, which means there will be less harsh temperatures to deal with. So, you know, at the moment, like in Canada and places like that, they can only grow certain food crops, for example, because they only have a certain window of time to produce those food until the ice comes again and the snow comes again. That will change, and while we'll get certainly still get snow on the higher altitudes of different places on the planet, there'll be less of it occurring in the lower altitudes because there'll be more uniform temperature right around the planet as a result. So initially there might be some things we have to work around. In the longer term, my feelings are is the things are going to actually be much better than what we're used to right now with regard to that. If we come down here and then across the...
Just here, send here. Hi, I've got a huge passion for the soil and the microorganisms, which I believe are the invisible, you know, masters of turning everything and changing things and
certainly
degrading things so beautifully. And yeah. I'm just wondering, will we be using microscopes in order to, like in a science team? Yes.
And one thing that I'm doing myself is that I've been buying things like microscopes, electronic measuring equipment, and some things that I know probably won't be available easily after changes are made. And the reason, and telescope would be another one that would be quite fascinating to have available to us. And the reason why is that, and even, like, if I, to be frank with you, if I had 100 grand at my disposal right now, I'd probably go out and buy 25 musical instruments of all different types. Right? Because when you think about it, where are all of those things produced? Where are they all located? How available are they going to be in the future? Mm. You know, a lot of them are easily manufactured now, going to be a lot more difficult to manufacture later. So, you know, something to worth considering for yourself is to, you know, just, again, if you have a passion,
you
see.
I love feeling your passion, like, microscope.
See, if you feel your passion.
One costs a few million, I can't afford that yet.
But if you feel your passion, you will go and do some of these things automatically. Does that make sense? Like, this is a part of involving your passion. Like, a lot of people go, oh, no, we need to simplify, we need to get rid of that. I'm like, as Mary will tell you, every bit of funds that we get donated for the God's Way of Love stuff get spent on something. Like, so last time we got together, you donated $1,600 towards God's Way of Love stuff. Quite a few hundred dollars went to hire the hall, but the rest is going towards 44 bales of hay getting delivered down to the learning centre. Does that make sense? Like just get what you need as you go. That's all you need to do. And yes, every area of expertise, every passion that you have, follow through on and investigate that particular area of passion and get what or do what you can do with it right now. And if that is like buying a microscope, go and buy a decent microscope. Don't skimp on it, you know, because it's not something that's going to be readily available later. And so do that now. Do you see? Like, this is all part of engaging your passion. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. How many of you thought I had a bit more limited view of the world? Jen, thanks.
But not on me.
Just leave your hand up, Jen. I don't know where you're going.
My feeling is that as our soul grows, the feeling of divine love will then flow out. My question is about human footprint. Is it true that as our soul grows and we develop in divine love, then that will just naturally flow and the links between the spirit world and the earth world will diminish in vibration, so we all become one.
Mm.
Is that truth or not?
That's exactly right. And also our own footprint on the planet will diminish.
Can you tell me more how that works?
Well, it's not really related to the environment question, though, is it?
It isn't.
No.
It isn't that the relationship between the environment that we are.
Well, what I would like to discuss it in the mediumship session that we will be having, which will be
tomorrow.
I think it's after lunch.
Yep,
yeah, tomorrow after lunch.
So my question is about the feeling of divine love.
That's the whole point of all this.
Well, remember, as our soul develops in divine love, we move through the spheres. In this project, God's Way of Love, we have the potential of creating the environment of a different sphere here on Earth. That is the truth.
Mm.
But it's through our soul condition growing and impacting on the environment.
Yep.
And we have the potential to create an area of land that's in a second sphere condition of love.
Or a third sphere or a fourth sphere or eventually an at-one-ment condition.
And so that then enables the human footprint, for want of a better way of putting it, to be a positive.
Of course.
A positive effect.
Every time you bring yourself in harmony with love, it's automatically going to be.
As your soul condition elevates beyond the sphere, say, right now the earth is living in a first sphere condition. The environment is in a first sphere condition. If we enter the second sphere, already we start to have a positive impact on the environment. And if enough people enter the second sphere, obviously, the whole environment changes. Yep.
The whole environment would become a second sphere environment. Does that make sense? And so forth and so forth. Now, remember, for those of you who visited our house some time ago when I gave a little talk about it, when Russell did some stuff on the land, remember I said to you that what we often do when we buy some land is we buy the land, we find the best spot on it, and we turn that into our home, which degrades it and puts it down into a worse condition. What we want to do on the land is we're going to only firstly live on anybody who lives there, and there won't be many living there initially, but anybody who lives there will be living in the worst spot of the land. All right? And my suggestion is for you to consider doing the same thing on your own properties, is to choose the worst spot of the property and live there until your condition changes, where your condition is better and you know it's better and animals are coming towards you rather than running away from you and so forth, and then you can move to another place of the land.
Or perhaps you'd be so loving that you'd want to stay and regenerate the area of land.
Yeah. If you have the focus of choosing the worst and making it into the best, rather than choosing the best and degrading it into your own condition, then you'll find things will work a lot better on your own land. Right? Many of you are still choosing the best and degrading it to your condition. And so my suggestion is to reconsider that. That's all. Yep. All right, well, I think we've covered a lot.
Justin,
you want to share? Yep.
Oh, it's time.
Just in relation to the environment and population.
Yep.
Obviously, the spirit world is infinite.
Yep.
As
is our physical universe, yep.
What about the Earth, though, like at the moment?
Well, see, all of you are thinking that we can't get off the Earth.
Cool.
New team, space travel.
Some of you who definitely want to be on that team. But you see, we're so fixed here, thinking a certain way, and we don't understand that actually as God raises the potential and as we then grow to the potential God has raised to on the planet, that we now will have the capacity to investigate other areas of science, which we have already begun on the planet, let's face it. You know, man currently has done some space travel, and although it's very limited and very basic in its form, it's what's called at the leading edge of today's science. My feelings are it's still got a long way to go. But But we will certainly be able to move from the planet to other locations, but we need to first understand the principles of love on the planet before that happens.
And my feeling is that our current, the current global population, what is it, 8 billion or something, living in harmony with love, not a blemish on, you know, God's creation. Really.
And the truth is the Earth in that place could probably support about 60 billion people. Now, bear in mind that coming Earth changes are probably going to reduce the population to around 3 to 4 billion people. So there are still a lot of areas of growth available. And but my feeling is that we need to also have a scientific focus on space exploration. And that is something that we'll certainly be able to do. And hopefully in your lifetime.
Thank you.
So is everyone starting to sort of expand that brain of theirs a bit? Away from the very fixed ways of thinking we have. You see, one beauty of space travel is that you have to be quite a developed individual at the soul level to do it. Because space travel, you have to look at every aspect of how the human organism can survive. Do you understand?
You're taking it out.
You're taking the human organism away from the Earth, which is a location that God's created for us to survive. See, this is one thing many of you probably have not considered yet, and that is, we are really like babies on this planet. God has provided almost everything for us, and we don't even have to know how it works. Now, for us to go into space and into another location, we have to know how this planet works completely.
And how our body works.
And how our body works and everything.
At the moment, we're just in this environment that supports it pretty much completely, and we just rely on that, and we just rely on the fact that my body's going to breathe and my body's going to get what it needs from the air, and we're very dependent in a way.
Does that make sense? Now, when you learn about space travel, you're going to have to learn about every single way in which the human and other forms of life can live while it's travelling through space. In other words, we have to recreate the entire environment of Earth in a thing that moves. Does that make sense? Now, once we get to that point, we'll understand pretty much everything there is to understand about the Earth. And how it works and how God created and how everything works in between and so forth. Now, to me, that is a wonderful motivation to actually understand the Earth. Like, if you understand this Earth, and I still know that many of you are not getting what I'm saying at the moment, but it's like the Earth is an ecosystem in an enclosed environment. Do you understand that? It's an ecosystem in an enclosed environment that supports 6 billion plus people at the moment on the planet.
And it does its own thing. We actually take from it.
We don't understand
it. We damage it, and it still maintains for us air to breathe, gravity, systems that nourish our body, all these things. It's doing it all for us.
Now, we are so babies that we don't even understand it. You see?
We're taking the gift from God, and we're living in it, and we're relying on it.
We don't understand it.
But we don't understand how it works.
Now, if we're going to have space travel, we are going to have to understand it. Because every single system that God has placed on this planet is a system that we're going to need while we're travelling through space. Do you understand what I'm saying? Every single system that's on this planet right at this moment is a system, if we're going to travel through space, we're going to need. So unless we can understand what's going on this planet, we're not going to be able to travel through space.
And in a way, I feel that God created us with souls that are learners. That are in their natural state, we learn. Through our desire and our passion, we learn and we seek to understand. And God has created this incredible, like, wonderland of ways for us to learn experientially.
And it's not just the Earth, it's the universe.
Exactly. So when we reach a state where we understand everything in this amazing creation and this amazing creation, then we get to step beyond this creation and go into space, which is pretty cool.
There's a lot more we can talk about that. Does that help a bit, David, answering the question, Justin?
Kind of went beyond the question.
Yeah. Kelly.
What about having children, because if God's way is the realisation of us being incarnated as a soul, having to come here to Earth, how would that work? Like having children in space, or...
It's not Earth that they've got to be in, it's the experience of incarnation, which actually creates the it creates the consciousness of themselves. And as soon as you incarnate, that's the purpose of the incarnation process. So that can happen anywhere. It can happen in space. It can happen here on the planet. And to be frank with you, there are many other Earths which are which all have people in development at the same level of development as us. And as a result of that, and we'll explain to you later at some point why. But they've still got people incarnating, souls incarnating into those locations. So.
Yeah.
And you'll meet them eventually. See, we've met some of them, but only when we got to the soul union state. God actually designed the system that we could actually meet them while we're living here on Earth and go to another place and meet them, you know? Anna, thanks. God's designed a remarkable place. Yeah?
This isn't an environment question. This is just about what you are talking about. Do you want to answer?
It's not an environment question.
No. This is about what we're talking about. We digress. I think
we digress.
We digress. Yes. So you're allowed to ask a question about our digression. Okay. So there are other Earths with people like us on there. Do they know about Jesus? Like, do they know about
every one of them? Every one of these locations has had a person like myself first discover the divine truth.
So they have a messenger of truth. That's not Jesus.
How many are there?
I couldn't tell you how many there are, but the potential is that there could be millions of them.
And so you think that God made like an earth and then a certain spirit world for that earth?
Yep.
And then like another spirit world for that earth.
That's correct.
Then when you get to the soul union, then you all meet up.
That's correct. And there's no reason why, if you can have a soul union here on Earth, then you can also meet everybody else.
Cool. Thank you.
Let's have lunch.
Let's have lunch.